You're listening to Sweats, Not and Tears, brought to you by Netmums. I'm Annie O'Leary.
And I'm Wendy Gollidge. And together we talk about all of this week's sweaty, snotty and tearful parenting moments.
With guests who are far more interesting than we are.
Thank you to the sponsor of this episode, Tropicana Lean. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm always looking for bright ideas to keep my family happy and healthy. And that includes moderating the amount of sugar my kids and me have each day without losing out on taste.
Absolutely. Which is why we're loving the new Tropicana Lean, which has 40% less sugar than fruit juice on average, but it's still super tasty. It's available at major supermarkets, so why not add a bottle to your weekly shop?
Now, let's meet this week's guest. Welcome to Sweat, Snot and Tears, this lovely, sunny, wintry day, everybody. I was feeling a little ropey, I would say a little bit sweaty slash teary this morning, but I ate a salad for lunch and now I feel brand new. So I think salads could be the key to lockdown. Wendy, how are you feeling?
I was feeling ropey until we went bum sledging down a hill.
What's bum? Oh, or not on a sled, just on your bottom?
Just, well, my daughter's... were bum sledding. It's called bum bogging, and it was great fun until one of them crashed into a hedge, and then it was less fun.
So
I'm feeling quite pleased that we got outside and did some fun stuff, and now I'm really excited to talk to your cousin.
Yes, so everyone, we decided to keep it in the family this week, and I've invited one of my cousins on the show. You might have heard of him, but don't be sad if you haven't. His name is Dermot O'Leary. Dermot, welcome.
Hey cuz, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Nice to speak to you. You don't see that many O'Learys.
No, not enough.
Well, no, there's plenty of us, but we don't need any more. But no. you don't see that many. Well, obviously in Ireland, we're 10 a penny, aren't we? But over here, it's nice to speak to another O'Leary. Where are your family from?
I was going to ask you the same. Mine are from Waterford. What about you?
Wow, just up the road, Wexford town.
Oh, well, there we go. Well, I might have some ancestors related there. Yeah, that is proper related.
Well, apparently it's originally a Cork name. So originally we're
it from is. Cork. I was once at a restaurant in Cork, and when they heard my name, they waved the bill because they said we were the kings of Cork.
That's hilarious. That's so Irish. That's such a brilliantly Irish
thing. I know, and I was
everyone's
like, really?
Name,
okay.
There's going to be so many O'Learys down there. They'll be like... That restaurant cannot be in business now. There's no
Well, no, but he was a very nice man.
They can't make a profit.
Exactly. And your name? My name's O'Leary too. Oh, great. Go out of here. Wendy, what's your surname?
Well, my surname is Gollidge, which is tricky because I've been known to get letters to Wendy Slurridge before, which is always appealing.
That's not good.
No one can spell it. No one knows
what
how to say
Gollidge
it.
What does Gollidge mean? What's the God origin?
Only yeah, where's knows. It from?
Who knows? We keep trying to find out. I need to do one of those Who Do You Think You Are programmes.
That would be my dream to go on that show. Dermot, have you been on it?
They actually researched my family for about 3 months and came back and went. And bear in mind, you know, Wexford is a port town, right? So
yeah,
and my
lots
family
of comings
are all,
and goings.
Exactly. And my family are all seafaring folk. And I have it on good authority that two of them went to America and one of them was a police officer and the other was a judge. They both got killed by the mafia in the 30s.
Oh my God.
I know, they couldn't find any record of this. And they came back and went, there's just not enough interesting stuff about your family.
Oh,
so like,
no.
Hang on a minute, what
got
are you talking
it.
About? They've gone everywhere. We're a family of sailors. So how in the world? I know, I just don't think they were trying hard enough.
And that's the ultimate insult. No, there's nothing else to say.
It's absolutely awful.
Got it.
My friend, though, I've got a dear friend called Ivor Baddiel, who's David Baddiel's brother.
Right.
And when they, and this is such a great mother story, when they went on, Who Do You Think You Are, the mum, and she's sadly passed away now. I met her a couple of times. She was lovely. And she was really interesting. So she was born in Nazi Germany and she got out as a child, as a baby, and she had a swastika on her passport, and it's this extraordinary story. And so her stories are like unbelievable enough, and they were sat around the dinner table with the researcher, and I'm sure Ivor won't mind me telling you. And then she said, well, of course, I always believed that she was just this great kind of Jewish mother. Yet I always believed that my uncle was actually my father. And everyone turned around and went, you've never said this before. What are you talking about? And she went, no, well, I genuinely believe it. So they went down that route, obviously, and started researching it. And at the end, they came back and went, you know, we've had an extraordinary life and stuff, but we haven't found any record that your uncle could have been your father. And she said, well, I know it is true. I know it's true. So, and Ivor and David are looking at her going, It's talking absolute nonsense, which is just that great kind of mother thing where they go, I'll give you something and...
something beyond your wildest dreams, kids.
Yeah, yeah, or just derail the conversation. But no, sadly, I've never been on it. But I tell you what you can do, Wendy, is you get those DNA tests. They're really interesting.
Did one, and I had quite a scandalous finding in mine.
Oh, go on.
So my family were supposedly, on both sides, as Irish can be. Back to like time began, back to the time of St. Patrick. And I had quite a significant portion of Indian blood.
Interesting.
I know, especially seeing as two generations of my dad's family were posted to India in the 1800s.
Well, there we go.
I know. Scandalous.
There's nothing that exciting in my lot. They're
but you don't
Wiltshire.
Know. You won't know.
They've never left Wiltshire,
test.
None of them. They're all from Wiltshire.
Seriously?
Never left Wiltshire.
No, they haven't. It's like they don't have a passport to leave Wiltshire, the lot of them.
Wiltshire is a fine county.
It's
it is.
A very fine county.
Why leave? Maybe they've just discovered there's no reason to leave.
Well, maybe. I've not been allowed to go back for 7 months or however long it is. So.
I know, yeah. That's the sad thing about all of this, isn't it? So, right, we're supposed to ask you the same question as we ask everyone every week on the pod, Dermot.
Oh yeah, go on.
Because our podcast is called Sweat, Snot and Tears. Mm-hmm. Have you seen or heard or experienced any sweat, snot or tears in your house this morning?
Oh God, yeah.
tell us. Share it.
Come on.
What have we had? We haven't had any sweat. We've had a little bit of snot. I kissed my son this morning and then realised I was sort of just kissing his drool and saliva.
Nice.
And I was, oh, that's so disgusting. and I'm lucky. Luckily, we're really closely related. And tears. No, he's really good. There haven't been any tears this morning. It's been. He's not a particularly teary baby, to be fair to him. We had
lucky
a little bit,
man.
There's a window, a finite window between, I pulled the early one this morning, so there's a finite window between nappy change and first milk of the day. And
clever boy, get the food in
if
fast.
You don't get, yeah, exactly. If you don't get in that window with the milk, then...
It can go wrong.
Yeah, they're not proper tears. They're tears like... That he's
angry
crying
tears.
Literally up until he gets the bottle in his mouth, and then all tears dissipate. Then we go into the period of what we call dramatic hands, where his hand just comes up the side of his head like a singer from the New Romantic era, and just sort of strokes his head like, I don't know, Brian Ferry or something, and then Fool for Love or something, and then just gets really into the milk. So yeah, but he's not a crier.
That's good. How old is he now, Dermot?
He's 7 months.
I think you're doing all right.
Yeah, you're not at the twatty toddler stage yet.
See, Wendy has a thing about toddlers. I love a toddler. Give me a toddler any day of the week.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because I've always loved kids, but when you've not lived with one before, you're just...
I like that you make it sound like he's your housemate.
We sort of is. All the stages are just so interesting, aren't they? I mean, I never understood. A lot of my friends said, guy friends said that the first few months is quite boring for men. I never got that. I really enjoyed the first few months of just staring at them and spending time with them, they're not focusing on you and stuff. But that, I didn't mind that, to be honest with you. I really, really enjoyed the first few months.
Well, that brings me on to the next question, actually, because I was going to ask how your lockdown is going, and do you think given you more time to spend with him chill?
I'm not joking.
Be a dad?
I mean, look, it's always difficult when you ask this question, irrespective of whether you're on telly or not. It's just because we all know that the backdrop of this is so hideous, and no one wants to. You feel almost guilty that you have any kind of like
any gripes.
Yeah. And you feel guilty also that you have, that you don't want to drive too much pleasure but I genuinely believe that with this, you know, we've never experienced anything like this as a world before. So you've got to take your positives where you can and not feel guilty about taking your positives where you can. And so my positive is that I've still been in work, and work has given me an incredible amount of focus and discipline and happiness. And B, you know, we've had a child, and that's been the greatest, it's the greatest thing we've ever done as a couple and as parents and as adults. So, you know, I can't complain at all. My family are all healthy, thank God. And, I want my mum and dad to get the vaccine.
Not had it yet? I was going to say.
No, it's not really rolled out in Ireland yet. So, so we're sort of waiting for that. But it's been an incredible time because I've been able to spend, a lot of time with our child. And had the pandemic not been here, I'd definitely have taken some paternity. But there's no way I'd been able to have. And I've spoken to a few friends who have had kids in lockdown, and they all sort of feel the same. Obviously, it's a terrible time, but you like I said, you take your positives where you can. You know, and that's definitely been one. It's you know, we feel sort of privileged and blessed to be able to spend the time we can with him and we have with him.
But has it been tough, like not being able to? Grandparents obviously can't really come over and see him, and you can't throw him at the grandparents when you're on 5 minutes peace.
Yeah, that's true.
Has that been tough?
It's been weird because we don't really have anything to compare it to. Dee's dad is in Norway and my parents are both in Ireland. So it's not like they'd be on our doorstep anyway.
Anyway, yeah.
Dee's mum is in Broadstairs. So that's a bit more tangible. But it is tough not being able to see them. And we were lucky. We both, when the lockdown lifted and the travel ban, so that period we had of, I don't know, 3-4 months, something like that last year. We were able to skedaddle to Norway and my parents came over here. So they've met him and everything. And I think it's really tough on them in particular. But, you know, you've got to keep positive and fingers crossed that we'll be able to see him soon.
Yeah, I know what you mean about the thinking positive. I've invented a new thing that I haven't told my family about yet that I'm going to make them all do tonight around the dinner table, which is
God,
I know, but look, I've got to get my kicks where I can. I was going to make them all bring some good news to the table. Yeah,
I like it.
But do you know what I mean? I just feel the need for just a bit of light relief.
Yeah, but can you imagine me getting a 5-year-old to bring good news to the
table?
Well,
yeah, Flo's only 6. She's not going to bring much better, is she? But let's see what they come up with. I'll tell you next week.
You'll have a great time. What are you talking about? That's a great idea, Annie.
Thank you, Dermot.
Yeah, all right.
I say
right,
need to stick together. Right.
Should I just go and let you two carry on?
You are right. It is a good idea, though.
Yeah, it is. I'm being a sarcastic cowbag. I'll shut up. Go on, Annie.
You've got another exciting thing happening now. In the next phase of lockdown, you've got another new book coming out, haven't you, Mr. Dermot?
Yes, that's right.
About Toto again.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's kind of weird because I'm in that period at the moment where this morning I'm halfway through the fifth book. So my head's in the fifth book.
Oh, right. But now you've got to talk about the other one.
And now I'm doing, and now I'm chatting about the fourth. 10 minutes
Don't
before.
Don't give anything away. Don't give anything away from book 5, will you?
Okay, for the fourth or the fifth, yeah, this is like when you interview people on plot spoilers and stuff on the radio and telly,
yes.
And you're like, oh God. Because in the era of binge watching we're all going through, like I really loved The Bay. And I don't know if you've seen the TV show The Bay with Morven Christie. It's terrific.
No.
Oh, it's brilliant. And two series of it. And we had two of the actors a couple of weeks ago on This Morning, but I'd binge watched it. And there was this massive plot twist halfway through episode 2 or 3. And so it was so difficult to sort of navigate through this interview without going, and
yeah,
when your character,
really
oh, shut up. So the story is this. Anyone, I don't know if you guys are au fait with the whole background of the story, but I'll tell you. So we have 3 cats. Sadly, one of our cats passed away a couple of years ago, but we have 2 cats now. But the story in my books is centered around our 3 cats, who are Toto, who's blind, Silver, Toto's brother, who sadly passed a couple of years ago, but is still living on in the books, and Sox, her adopted younger brother from Battersea. Now, Toto and Silver are both from Italy. My wife...
Okay, wait, I need to ask this question first before we go anywhere. How did you get cats from Italy? How did that happen? Did you
really
go
hard,
and bring them back? I don't understand.
It's hard, but it is possible. So we've got a little villa down in the south in a place called Puglia that we rent out.
I love Puglia.
It's great, isn't it?
Oh.
And we've been going there like 10, 15 years, and we bought a place ages ago. It was like falling apart, and we've done it up, and we rent it out, and it's our holiday home. We love it. And it's our sort of second place really. And we just sort of go there whenever we can. And then to wipe its nose and we make sure we rent it out. So we were down there about 8-9 years ago, and this it's kind of middle of nowhere. And there's a lot of wild animals around. And there's this lovely cat called Plaxi who was staying, and we named her after one of our guests. Friends of ours rented it out, the Locatellis, you know, Giorgio Locatelli, the chef,
yes.
And his wife Plaxi. So we named the cat after Plaxi because Plaxi had dark hair, and the cat turns up just around the same time. So we started calling the cat Plaxi. And around Easter time, me and Dee were there on our own or with our families. And Plaxi was heavily pregnant, and I had to come back a day early for work. And Dee stayed, and Plaxi had her kittens in our room pretty much in our pillowcase with D.
Nice.
With D there as a cat midwife.
Midwife
so
in chief.
Oh, wow.
We were going to get a dog that year. So these four kittens came out. Next door over there took a couple. And we thought, well, this is serendipity. So we were going to get a pet anyway. So we looked into it. And you can fly them back. I think it's BA or Alitalia. One of them fly. I think it's BA. You can fly animals back with a pet passport. So we got friends of ours looked after them for a couple of months, and then we flew them back, and they got here in July 2013.
That is very cool. I like that.
Brilliant.
Shot.
So we realised though that Toto, very early doors, couldn't really see too well, and she was bumping into things, and so we had her diagnosed and checked out, and she's kind of got 95% blindness and maybe 5% vision, but she sees breaks in light. And she sees you. You can play with her and react to her.
That's
she'll
cool.
react to you. Yeah. So very quickly we started calling her the little ninja, and then and that's where the idea came from. Is the idea that during the day she's this kind of very chilled, quite lazy blind cat, and
yeah.
then the evening and night her and Silver go out with her friends, and essentially solve crimes. So she works. She's a member of an ancient international order of ninja cats.
Obviously.
The head of the UK branch of which is Larry, who works at 10 Downing Street, who's a real cat, Larry the 10 Downing Street cat.
You've had fun with this, haven't you?
Oh, 100%. I've loved it. And do you know what I've really loved, Wendy, is going from the first book where you introduce the cats to then, and what I didn't estimate would have such an impact on me was, when you go and do book tours or readings and you meet the kids and then they know more about it than you do, because you know how brilliantly geeky kids are. They'll go, in chapter 4 in book 2, when you said...
and you're like, did I write that?
What colour egg were they? And you're like, what?
Yeah, so really testing your character development there.
Absolutely. But they love the character development. And that's the thing I think I've enjoyed most is developing these characters over five books now. So the first book was kind of them discovering London, and they met their best friend, who is this chap who's a kind of cross-species rat cat. He's this rat who looks like a cat, and obviously cats are cooler than rats. So he's decided to live his life as a cat, but he's actually rat royalty. So his nickname's Catface, but his real name is Alexander Ratanoff the 33rd. And he's from a very distinguished North London rat family. And he's essentially heir to become the king of one of the five rat families of London, who all live subterraneous. Mm-hmm. So so he's their best friend. He's kind of like, if you can imagine a Richard E. Grant, Stephen Fry style character, with a cravat and a kind of a tweed suit. That's kind of his vibe.
I can feel a TV adaptation coming on.
Oh yeah. So he's kind of their guide around London. And then, so the first story is the King Cobra escapes from London Zoo, which is the most venomous snake in London Zoo. And they have to track it down and catch it because they think it's going to decimate the animal population of North London, although it's not what it seems. The second book, Every Single Piece of Cheese in the UK, gets kidnapped and goes missing on the eve of an international peace conference where if cheese isn't available, then almost all out war.
Do you take some sort of hallucinogenic drugs when you're writing this?
Hang on a second, it gets weirder. The third book is based around the annual Animal Music Festival of Catstonbury, where they go down.
Oh, yes, of course it is.
And there's some strange goings on afoot. And the fourth, which I have in my hand right now, is the Toto the Ninja Cat and the Mystery Jewel Thief. Which is the animal.
The Indiana Jones.
Well, the animal world's spectacular crown jewels are kept under lock and key in the Tower of London, guarded by ravens. But when Toto goes to visit, I'm literally reading the back of my own book. When Toto goes to visit them, they're stolen from right under her whiskers, and her boss Larry is framed for the crime. So will her and her friends be able to solve the mystery and track down the real thief, Ellipsis?
Dun, dun, dun.
Exactly. Exactly.
But I have to ask, how did you get from adopting some kittens and them coming to the UK to writing this as a book? I've heard you've got a bit of a track record as an author, and you used to write mini mystery stories.
Oh, yeah. My poor father. My dad came over from Ireland in the late 60s with my mum, and then, you know, like a lot of that generation, we're the first generation, really, that we've been able to kind of follow our dreams, right? You know, I mean, that generation, you work hard, you get a job, you stay in that job, kind of cradle to grave stuff. So my dad came over with nothing, worked on building sites, paid for his way through night school, ended up getting a master's in business, and then worked for BT for about 30 years. It was never really his job never really defined what the person he was. You know, he's not accountancy or whatever it is he worked in. Wasn't his passion at
his
all.
His calling.
No. But he was a hardworking guy. He's a hardworking guy, and he did really well. And we didn't grow up with him an awful lot, but he did really well as he went on. And anyway, the reason I say this is because he used to work a lot from home, so he would have this kind of one of the first old Mac computers, and he'd have like this big printer and loads of paper.
He sounds so like my dad. I swear they actually are related, but carry on.
Right. So he had all this paper, so he'd come home and maybe use the computer from time to time, and I just had loads of paper so I could write my stories. So I used to write them, and then I'd go around our estate and just outside Colchester and knock on doors and just sell really 10-year-old detective fiction for 5p.
Brilliant. Did you make a profit, dare we ask?
Well, I mean, the great thing for me was that everything was a profit because I had no outgoings whatsoever.
You hadn't even bought the paper.
Right. So I had a few, I definitely got a couple of bags of sweets off the back of it, I suppose. But so I've always had that bug. And then you start working in telly, and I was always really, I think with my job, part of the knack of my job is being really honest with viewers and listeners. Don't treat them like idiots and don't bullshit them. So I was always of the, well, an extension of that is then you at least co-write your own scripts. You can't really write your own scripts because you haven't got time to write your own scripts and do the show, and you're on a fast turnover live show. But I, from the very early stage, I wanted to sort of make sure that what I was saying was my own words. So that's kind of always been my mantra. And so talking about Ivor Badil's the guy I write with. So David's brother is the guy. We sit down, so we wrote every episode of X Factor we wrote. You know, and we're not talking War and Peace here, but it's just, it doesn't sound like an awful lot, but actually it does make a difference, I think, when people sort of listen to and watch you, that those words are your words. And yeah.
Absolutely.
So I've always written. And then the year I wasn't doing X Factor, I remember waking up when I realized I wasn't going to do it anymore and thinking, right, what am I going to do with the rest of my life? Okay, what do you want to do? You've got a bit of time now and you don't have to rush to get back into work, thankfully, and you're blessed like that. So what do you want to do? And one of the things I really wanted to do, I had about two or three ideas for books. One was a kids book and a couple of young adult books. And I went into a publisher I worked with before because I did this kind of 10, 15 years kind of TV, or the last 20 years, I guess, TV kind of memoir-y kind of book. It wasn't really a biography, but it was actually about music. So I went to the same publisher, Hachette, and said, look, I've got these ideas. And they were, you know, obviously who I am and what I've done has got me through the door. But, you know, they're no mugs. So they said, go away, work on it, come back with a chapter plan. And I pitched it. And then I'll never forget, they said, great, look, we really like the idea. We want to sign you on a two-book deal. And I remember shaking hands and going, that's great, wonderful, thank you. And I left the office, shut the door and went, I've got one idea for one book. I don't have a two. Yeah. What are you talking about, a two-book deal?
That's really scary. There's nothing scarier than a blank piece of paper, right?
Man.
Well, the second book block, it's a famous thing,
right,
isn't it?
So, but for me, I really enjoyed the process of writing the first one. And then I kind of got into a bit of a groove of it. And so now I spend most of my time when I sort of allot my time for writing. To be honest, I spend most of my time prepping, researching, getting all my narrative sorted and knowing where I'm going. And then as soon as I've got that, the actual writing process.
It happens.
I've found
it? It
at
just,
least comes relatively, not easily, but it flows. When I know how my ducks are in order, I sort of really enjoy the process.
Just imagine how crazy it's going to get when your little boy's giving you totally bonkers kid ideas for themes. He's already bonkers.
And then, Dad, can he grow wings and fly?
Yeah, I'm going to ignore all of those. So you want him to grow wings and fly, you can write it.
Yeah, that's very good incentive, actually.
He probably will.
Yeah.
Why do you think you felt comfortable writing for that age group? Is that an age that you really remember well from your childhood?
That's a really good question.
Do you think that you're a child at heart? What's the thing?
I've always liked kids. Like, I grew up in it was only me and my sister, but I grew up in a...
And is she older or younger?
She's 3 years older.
Right.
I grew up in a very safe, comfortable kind of village environment where I grew up in a little village called Mark's Tay. It was kind of a weird upbringing because obviously it was a very Irish upbringing. And every second week we were in London with family and very Catholic upbringing. And yet when we were back there, it was, you were just like any other kind of household. But when we shut the door, it felt like a very Irish house.
Yeah.
So it was kind of, in many ways, it was kind of the best of both worlds because you had this lovely kind of 1970s, 1980s kind of era, kind of, you know, not as many cars on the road, so you could play on the road,
yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah.
And everyone went to the local primary school, so I knew everyone in the village. And so everyone kind of looked after each other's. So even if you were eight, if there was a five-year-old there, you'd know who that five-year-old was and they'd play with you and then you'd sort of look after him. So there was always kids around and I always felt comfortable even as I got older with children. To be honest with you, I never set out and went, I want to write four kids. I've never been that premeditated about anything really. It's just the idea came and then I thought, well, how does this, because I want it, for me, the best TV show the last 30 years is The Simpsons because it works on so many levels. And I kind of wanted to, that was always my inspiration, I suppose, because I wanted to write that adults could go, that's quite a funny joke, like Castonbury, for example. You know, adults that have been to Glastonbury would get references in there that, you know, there's the different tents or the different bars you can go to,
yeah,
or something. And at the same time, you want kids to be able to get it as well. And so you want it to work on a few different levels, but not try too hard to, you know, I mean,
that's hard to do, to make it funny for grown-ups.
I think everyone thinks writing for kids is easy. Do you know what? It flipping isn't.
No, it sort of depends what, if you can get in a groove and you know your own voice, then it's okay. If you try too hard to do anything that doesn't sound like you, then I think you can get scuppered quite easily. But I was, for me, it's like never patronize kids, never talk down to them. Always, they've got great sense of humor, kids, and they can spot when you're trying too hard. So the TV shows I liked when I was a kid were never the TV shows that were really aimed at me as a child, like, yeah, we're always together, kids. It was always the stuff, I think most kids are like this. I think it was always the stuff that was aimed slightly older that you went, yeah, this is the stuff. It was always, that was more aspirational to me. So it was always stuff like Grange Hill rather than Blue Peter, I suppose. And that's why I love The Simpsons, because it's all things to all people. And yet the heart of it is a lovely story about family and love and redemption. Or every week, isn't it? It's about The Simpsons. It finishes with that family are really tight, yeah, little unit, and they love each other.
So I was going to ask what your favourite reads as a kid were, because I've got a 9-year-old and I'm forever having to find, she wants to know what I read and what books I'd like her to read. And I'm forever kind of trying to think back to what I read and I can't remember most of the time. Is your writing now inspired by what you loved as a kid?
That's a good question. I think yes, but not probably consciously.
Yeah, okay.
So like most people, there was a lot of Roald Dahl in the house. I was lucky enough, we had one of those mobile libraries that came. So we had a great...
God, we had one of those. I remember that, yeah.
Yeah. And then this kind of yellow, like big lorry would turn up once a month or something around the village. And so we could, we were only 6 miles from Colchester. And I had to go and every Saturday, because I went to a local Church of England school. I mean, I had to go on Saturday morning as my friends were off playing football or whatever. I had to go to a local, into Colchester and go to a convent to be taught by nuns.
Wow.
First 7 years of my life for my preparation for my Holy Communion. But as a way of kind of recompense, my dad would take me to BHS to see my mum afterwards, and we'd go to their canteen and I was able to have whatever I wanted. So I'd have like eggs, bacon and strawberry flan or something for breakfast.
Yeah.
And then we would go to the library where my dad would read the paper and I would grab as many books as I possibly could for that week. So... and I have very fond memories of that. So, and my parents always read to me, and which is obviously a huge thing that I'm even doing to Casper now, even at 7 months old.
I was going to ask you about that. Are you doing that already? I remember doing it to mine when they were tiny and like didn't even know what a book was.
Yeah.
But when you love books, you're just so desperate to make them love books, aren't you?
Well, I mean, there are so many great babies' books as well. So there's a lot of those kind of like touchy-feely ones that are really lovely, like That's Not My Flamingo or...
Yeah.
Things like that. And then actually we're sort of already reading him books that he has no idea what the words mean or anything. But there's some really funny books. There's a great book called Oi Frog. I don't know.
Yes, I know.
No, now hold on. You've got to move on. Get to Oi Duck Billed Platypus.
Well, I bought the series the other week. So I've just, we've finished Oi Dog. And next is the cat, which I love the cat.
The sarcastic cat is just brilliant. I love these books.
It's kind of what I love about these kind of books, and it's the same kind of with TV, with any partnership. It sort of permeates into your everyday kind of language, doesn't it? So one of us said to the other one, but I don't want to do that. You know, it's not about wanting to, it's about doing the right thing, which is what the cat says in the first book.
Does he calm down when you eat him? Is it something he enjoys?
He loves the process of being with you and snuggling up
and turning the pages
and touching. That's why those kind of, that's not my flamingo. So those kind of books he loves, because he just gets to touch things, or Where's the Witch or things like that, you know, the kind of four animal astronauts in one, or I think he just likes the ritual of it.
And when he's older, you'll find yourself being stupidly soppy over these books, because I've got baby books I can't get rid of, even though my kids are older.
I've got them on the bookshelf now, and they will never go ever.
Yeah, no, I get that already. I mean, I'm quite soppy anyway, so there's like baby grows he's had from when he was 1 month. I'm like, well, we're not getting rid of that.
It's why you have to keep buying bigger houses when you have kids. It's not because the kids need more space. It's just the stuff that you can't bear to get rid of.
It's true. I spent years telling my husband I was keeping it all for the next one, and then we had the next one and I couldn't. He then was like, well, there's not going to be another one. So he was kept trying to make me get rid of stuff, and I was like, no, to keep it.
It's just mine.
You become hoarders.
Yeah, definitely.
So what is next for Dermot O'Leary?
So I'm doing book 5 now, which I need to deliver in 2 or 3 weeks. I'm sort of there. Next week I'll get my head down and and break the back of that, hopefully.
Best crack on.
I know. sorry, Wendy. And then I've got This Morning and Radio, and I've got a podcast on Audible called People Just People.
Where you're pretty busy. Like, how are you fitting all this in and a baby? I don't get it.
It's quite hard, if I'm honest.
Is Dee Superwoman? Is it actually that she's holding everything up and you're running around working?
She is definitely. She's got her own stuff. She has.
Yeah, she's not exactly idle, is she?
No, she's just got a job directing The Split on BBC. I don't know if you've ever seen The Split. It's so good.
I have, yes.
She's director on the third series of that, which is amazing.
That's exciting. Yeah.
So we're both pretty busy, but we've got a great nanny, to be honest with you. We work as a team, which is lovely. So there's sort of three of us. And the lovely thing is we both work from home a lot, so we're able to kind of see a lot of him and get hands-on with him as well, which is great.
So when you look back at this strange time, which obviously has had some kind of silver linings for you, what do you think you'll have learned from the pandemic and lockdown? We're asking this of everyone, because I feel like I'm always trying to squeeze some meaning out of it somehow. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get that. And why wouldn't you? I mean, I think if we just sort of blithely just kind of get back to whatever the new normal is going to be.
Yeah, it would be too weird, wouldn't it? If we just pretended it never happened.
If we don't learn anything as a species from this, then there are wider things we need to learn as a species, which are largely about taking care of our planet and ourselves, and actually our world probably needs to be a bit more local. I mean, and that's not to say don't travel, of course we all want to travel, but how we eat our food, what we consume, all of these things, I think we need to be thinking about, well, do I need that water that's come from Fiji, or can I actually just filter some tap water? Do you know what I mean?
There's that as a
kind of a wider thing. But I think personally, and I know that I've just reeled off 3 or 4 things I'm doing, but it is kind of appreciating the smaller stuff, and whether that small stuff is a cup of coffee, or whether that small stuff is a walk in the park, or it's just kind of being able to turn the phone and the computer off and actually, you know, and I've never particularly been someone who's always on my phone, but it's making sure you have time for you and those around you, I think.
I was going to say, I think it's about realising that life is actually nicer when it's a bit more simple.
Yeah, and I think if we do, please God, if we have learned anything, it's that we don't go back to the way of working that we used to.
Yeah, I agree.
And by that, I mean everyone. I think it doesn't matter what you do for a living. I think it's the idea of, you know, chasing our... People don't want to work like that. It doesn't make you happy. It makes you die young. You know, people want to work hard, and you should work hard, but don't work to the detriment of your happiness. And it's easy for me to say that, because I've worked hard and I've got enough steaks in the freezer, but don't work. That's up to companies to protect their own workers. That's making sure that people are given the right conditions to work under. So So that delivery driver isn't breaking his back and having to squeeze in too many deliveries in a day that unrealistically is not be able to. You know, it's those sorts of things I think that as a society we need to look at.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Now, this is a very deep question that we ask everybody. Mm-hmm. But we're really interested to know, how do you want to be remembered?
Oh, God, that's such a...
And we're not bumping you off, by the way. We're not saying...
Watch
out. Now the end is near, Dermot, and I'll be fine.
You are cracking on.
I think if I can be considered to be a good friend and a good husband and a good dad and someone that's like great company and with kindness in the soul, then I'll be happy with that.
That's good. That's a nice answer.
Yeah, we take that.
Basically, just so you know, we judge people really harshly on the answer.
Oh, do you? What's the worst answer you've had?
You passed really well.
What's the worst answer you've had for that question?
Everyone's been quite careful, actually, haven't they? We have
one of my favourites, other than yours, obviously, was Nadia Hussein, who said, "I don't really care about being remembered," and just said, "As long as I made a difference in my life, I don't care if you don't remember me when I'm gone."
Oh, that's quite sad. Also, of course we're going to remember. Of course we can remember
Nadia. But I think her point was, I'm not in it for the acclaim. I'm just in it to make a difference while I'm here. And I thought that was quite a nice sentiment.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. I want to be,
You want the biggest obituaries ever.
Absolutely.
God damn it, remember me.
Yes.
We're going to put up a monument.
Right, over to you, Annie. Much trickier question.
Yeah, our much deeper question, which is, Dermot, what's for tea and who's cooking?
Well, I'm cooking 99% of the time.
Good man.
Because it's a night before this morning. Because I'll have to work quite late today to do prep for the show.
To get ready for tomorrow, right?
You don't get your script till your briefing pack script till about 7. So I need to, you sort of always got to factor a couple of hours in to go through it tonight. So what we normally do is I either play football on Thursdays, which obviously I can't do at the moment, or we'll go for a little run. And then when I get back, I do a really quick noodle soup.
Nice.
Ooh. Yeah, no, it's just great. It's noodle soup Thursday.
Tell us what goes in.
Oh, well, I start with actually, there's some really good, like Singaporean like packet noodles you can get with a little bit of salt, a little bit of salt, and then you add to the, so that's your base, but then you add, fry up some prawns.
Is it like a pho? It's like a
chili, kind of more like a ramen, I suppose.
Oh,
chili,
lovely.
Garlic, spring onions, broccoli, greens, all of that, and it's cooked in about 15 minutes, so it's a nice quickie. However, we've had a lot of that this week, a lot of soups this week, and I got some hake out of the freezer that I bought the other day.
Ooh.
And which I normally wouldn't freeze fish, but we had too much, so I put some in the freezer, and I got it out tail end of yesterday, too late for it to defrost, so it's still in the fridge, so it'll still be all right tonight. So I'm probably going to cook that with. I cook a lot of fish, all you really need with fish is oil, garlic, lemon, parsley.
Yeah, simple.
They're the only things you need, and that's what Pooley has taught me. We're kind of off, we're trying not to do potatoes during the week, so I'll probably do that with some mashed swede and some greens.
Call yourself an O'Leary and you're cutting back on the potatoes, Dermot.
Tell me about it. Listen, Jesus. I've got once a week telly to do.
Well, I guess you're getting into the whole weaning thing now as well. Are you pureeing mush left, right?
Oh, yes, I hadn't thought about that. He's that age, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah,
Is it getting messy?
It's getting pretty messy. We did porridge. I did porridge this morning. He absolutely is a porridge fiend.
Good boy.
Can't get enough
good
of it.
Good boy. This is when you need a dog, by the way. I know you've got away with cats till now, but a dog to lick up all the spoils from the weaning baby.
That's true. Mm. The cats love the porridge, though. Any leftover porridge, they hammer that.
I remember making these things called porridge fingers.
Oh, God. I never got sucked into that, Wendy. I can't believe you did.
What are porridge fingers, Wendy?
Don't go there, Dermot. Don't go there.
Wendy, tell me.
You overcook porridge in the microwave until it becomes like a soggy finger, and then you're supposed to hand it to them and they just chomp on it. And I remember making it and just thinking, Christ, I wouldn't feed that to the dogs. It was just disgusting. It's like
just let them have normal porridge.
I know. It was Annabelle Carmel. She's OCD about mess, isn't she? She doesn't like mess.
Is she? Yeah. That explains a lot. Sorry, Annabelle. I do love your recipes. Right, Dermot, the final question. It's the big one.
No, there's two more. I want to know, first of all, what's been your favourite bit of dadhood? What's the best bit so far?
Well, it's the little things, really. It's not necessarily, I mean, putting the buggy together successfully was a big thing for me.
Of course.
That's genuinely not my skill set. And I hate putting things together and manuals and so forth. So that not falling apart, especially when you take it apart and then put it together. So we went to Oslo, and then we've got this great shot of, obviously because it was post lockdown, but no one was really traveling. So we've got this great shot we've got of me putting the buggy together, back together, and D changing in Africa on a luggage carousel. And it's just
pure class. Parenthood summed up.
Classic traveling with a baby.
Yeah. But for me, I know it's going to sound really schmaltzy, but it's actually the first time you see him in the morning. It's just the nicest, like you see him and you get that kind of smile, and then
they're so pleased to see you.
Sing a little song and yeah.
I used to wonder, did they forget that we existed overnight, do you think? And then they're like, oh yeah, you're no. quite nice. Yeah,
mine were
you.
Up far That's too lovely. Much in the bloody night to forget me. They saw me on the air every hour.
That's very true.
There
That's
was no very, forgetting very mummy.
True. Man, oh man.
Well, yeah, you've got all the fun bit. You've got the crawling and the walking and the...
Yeah, and the first words. Come. You've got all the nice stuff to come. It's
And
great,
the lovely thing
it?
Is I'm not in any hurry for that. So, you know, I'm perfectly happy for it to just to go on.
Well, you've got a lot to do, to be honest, before all that happens. You've got to finish this book.
Yes.
You've got to crack on. Come on.
First of all, you've got to sing to
Jesus,
us.
Jesus, Annie.
Oh, yeah. Last question.
Go on, Annie. You ask him.
No, okay, right. So it's our favourite question. We ask it every week, every guest, and we've had some absolute corkers. We want you to imagine that you're tucking Wendy and I into bed at night.
Yeah. Every time you say this, I cringe.
And we want you to sing to us what you would sing to Casper. Sing us your family lullaby.
Because I've got a lot of weird... I'm sorry, am I tucking you in as adults, or I've got this weird kind of thing where
it's best
adult.
Not to overthink it. Don't
Yeah, I would try and keep your mind quite blank.
Wendy, I've got you as a sort of like normal head but baby body.
Oh, that's just weird.
You're sort of tucked into the same bed together.
Yeah,
that's probably fine.
That has
yeah.
happened before. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me see. Okay. Yeah. So I've I wrote Casper a song.
Oh wow.
Which is kind of a Noel Coward refrain.
Okay.
And I'll sing you the first verse of that.
Okay.
Caspy waspy doo da, we're in love with you. Since first I saw you on Berkeley Square, what was I to do? I'll meet you at the Ritz at 4, we'll have tea for 2. Cause Caspy waspy doo da, I'm in love with you.
Yay! Oh, I love it, I love it, I love it, I love it. Well
There's
done.
Two more verses, but I won't subject you to those.
Okay, they can be just for Casper. You're our second guest who has sung a self-penned song. You and Bryony Gordon. Yeah.
Oh, that's good company.
So you're in very good company. Very good company indeed. She's a really good egg. We love her a lot. Okay, well, thank you so much, Cuz, for coming on.
Pleasure, Cuz.
Love to the fam.
Will, of course. And to Aunt...
Trisha.
And to Auntie Trisha. How is,
yeah, and
how
Uncle
is Auntie
Ray.
Yeah. And Uncle Ray.
There you go.
Sorted.
Thank you, Wendy, as well. It's lovely talking to you.
Oh, it's a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for coming on.
My pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
Have a good day. Enjoy your
Take
hake.
Care. Thank you. Take care, guys.
Take care. Bye-bye.
This episode is sponsored by Tropicana Lean, a new juice drink which has 40% less sugar than fruit juice on average, but is still full on taste.
There are three delicious flavours to choose from: citrus fruit, tropical fruit, and mixed berries. My personal favourite is the mixed berries, so I might be hiding that one from the kids.
Tropicana Lean is available at all major supermarkets. Why not give it a go?